Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, where we all intend to be brilliant.
Yes,
it's very nice too.
Today.
Yes, it's Rosemary's first statement. Let's go on the radio and be brilliant. Well, we'll see how we do this morning. Welcome to our panel discussion. It's very nice to have you with us and to have you even share your thoughts with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Sometimes that is, we enjoy hearing your comments. Let me get to introducing our panel, and then we will start talking about the issues of the day. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning.
And Rosemary Armeo is with us, director of the journalism program at the University at Albany.
Good morning. Do you notice that Alan pulled his microphone in front of him for the first time ever?
Not the first time,
without
but quite
told?
Frequently Joe has to do that for me.
Yeah, it was
that's good. It only took how many decades to get that down?
As you get older, Rosemary. You know, sometimes you lose some of your adult functions. That's all.
You better keep this going, Joe.
Well, just pray it's only in the mic, right? And now a man who has lost none of his adult functions, Mike Spain is with us. He is the Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. All right. So let's go. There's a lot of places we can start, and I just think let's start here, and then we can move on to some of the other stuff. But Britain will have a new prime minister, and boy, they're quick, aren't they? So the Brexit vote happened that night. David Cameron said, "I'm leaving. I'm
but
out."
But not till October.
But I'm leaving in October. I want there to be a smooth transition.
Yeah.
And then there were two or three people, well, four people who were interested in the job. They got winnowed away, and then in comes the final
Theresa May.
Theresa May,
she sounds kind of Southern, doesn't she? Yeah. Theresa May.
She doesn't sound Southern.
No, she doesn't sound Southern,
but the name could.
The second woman after Margaret Thatcher to hold that post. Multiple challenges, obviously, as she takes office, from negotiating this departure from the European Union and also to address the social and political divisions and reviving a wounded economy in her country. And this is expected. She's supposed to move into 10 Downing Street tomorrow night. So there you
no
go.
No extended,
well, they get
long
to
drawn
change
out.
The drapes and paint the walls or anything like that before she moves.
I think they just move in.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than us. No extended long
different.
Election
How long
season.
Have we been in this election season? Since like
6 or 7 years, I think.
We're starting on the next one.
Right.
And this hasn't finished yet.
It was
right.
Interesting.
People are talking about 2020. Yeah.
At one point, you had the two candidates, both women, who are vying, and the woman who dropped out. Made a statement that she had kids, unlike Theresa May, and therefore she was obviously the better woman. And that was a big controversy. I love that.
Yes.
Interesting debate.
It was a very interesting debate and a very impassioned debate.
Impassioned, yep.
Through Twitter and other social media platforms. So not to be overly America-centric here, but how does this affect us?
Well, you know, she's a moderate. She seems to be a populist. She talks about essentially letting employees be involved in the operation of businesses and have seats on boards. And she talks about balancing the pay for top officials versus the workers. She wants an economy that works for everybody, not just a privileged view. She sounds like Bernie Sanders a little bit.
Yeah, she does. She's talked about immigration, too, in a way right. that's not hurtful and divisive, which we've heard a lot of from Trump. Well, him, too. But I meant from England. So, yeah, she looks really interesting. I hope America takes a course, a key from this. Let's put some women in office.
She's been described as Merkel-like.
Yeah.
Angela Merkel is great.
More like Angela Merkel than like Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
Right.
And a lot has been made about the great partnership between Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and if it was possible for her to have such a partnership with either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Her big problem is going to be looking towards Europe to begin with and for some time. And she definitely pulled the the curtain down, put the curtain down on any kind of do-over. She says Brexit is Brexit.
And yet she was with Cameron on that. She was against exiting the European Union, yet she says the people have spoken. And she's going to carry that out. And, I admire that. I think it sounds like there's quite a reasonable person. And to come up with her so quickly and get her into office so swiftly is something we should learn from over in the colonies here.
Exactly. You're right on the money, Mike. It is a matter of going back to the colonies. It is a matter of going back to the end of World War II, when basically Franklin Roosevelt had his way with Great Britain, took the colonies away, said there's not going to be colonialism anymore. Hold your letters. I know somebody's going to accuse us of doing the same thing.
You Tory.
Yeah. But we took it. But we put a stop to it. Now we bring it up to this point. Brexit was just one of the last stops. Scotland will obviously be the next last. The next last stop. And Ireland.
And
the unification
Ireland, right.
of Ireland. Yeah. So what we could see here is that, London is a sort of theme park for people who want to go to Dollywood or, Bollywood or one of those places.
One of those places.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have Westminster Abbey that, they have those guards outside and, to get their picture taken with them. I mean, it's a tourist trip.
Yeah. Either that or you go up to the Tower
or
of London.
A center of international monetary transactions and other
or
things.
That. Yes, right. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about other things. I want to do. I really want to get into Ruth Bader Ginsburg's comments and talk about that.
Smartest woman in the world, yeah.
All right. We'll talk about her, and we'll talk about other things. And we'll welcome your letters, all coming up next. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And rule of thumb, Supreme Court justices usually do not give interviews. And when they do, they're usually talking about a book or talking about their wives or talking to a law school. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, takes a different approach. And she has made it quite clear in meetings with both the New York Times and the Associated Press about her feelings about the court, the failure to meet and to consider the nomination of Merrick Garland, and also about the possibility of a Trump presidency. She has been very candid in her remarks, saying that I can't imagine what this place would be. I can't imagine what the country would be with Donald Trump as our president. For the country, it could be 4 years. For the court, it could be. I don't even want to contemplate that. The remarks were made over the weekend. There is an article in the Washington Post this morning, which basically says that she may have gotten herself into some trouble with her outspokenness. And she said basically the concern is that if the Supreme Court has an issue before it involving even the presidency and electing the president, as it did in 2000, has she...
You mean if there's like a Bush versus
yes.
Gore kind of case? Well, if she has to recuse herself because she's already expressed her negative opinion about
her
Donald
bias.
Trump,
yes.
right, then it would... Because of Merrick Garland not being named to the court, it would be it wouldn't have to be a tie.
That's right.
It could be 3-2.
What makes her so sure that she will have to recuse herself?
There's a bunch of law professors saying
yeah,
that. They
a
might
bunch
have
of
to
law
do it.
Professors.
Okay,
that,
here. Yeah. This is a smart, powerful woman getting into trouble for speaking out. You can tell why she is my heroine. I think she's amazing. And my first thought when I read about this is that she's planning to get out, and there aren't going to be that many decisions. There would be no decisions involving up Trump
presidency. She sounds like a woman ready to retire.
Yeah, this is women. As a journalist, we know this. Old men talk a lot more than young men, and old women never. They open up for the first time after a whole lifetime of being reticent. So I think she may be getting ready to pack it in, but she's interesting.
Well, there is
I wish we heard from more of our judges.
There's a disgusting piece in the New York Post today, editorial piece by Lipsky this morning, that is just off the wall, just following his master's voice, it's the kind of thing that they're going to seize on to do anything with that they can to destroy her.
Well, I think that her comments were not casual and off the cuff. I think they were absolutely calculated, and I agree that it signals that she's ready to retire. She's talking about the younger guys who are in their late 70s, and here she's 82, and that they might be retiring during the next presidency. Everything she says indicates that. So she's basically acknowledging that the next president will appoint her successor, and she won't have any control over who that is. So she's speaking her mind.
And also, none of these comments, from anyone who has followed her or knows her, none of these comments come as any surprise at all, do
nope.
they?
Nope.
No, that's exactly yeah. right. She's just being honest.
Yeah. yeah.
Scalia was pretty outspoken, too.
He certainly was.
And, and as the article in, that you had us read made clear, we all know where Clarence stands on many issues, too. He and his wife are both... very big conservative
right, his wife has
supporters.
Been a big Ted Cruz supporter.
Right,
and,
exactly.
So none of these are real surprises. It just seems to offend legal
purists.
Ethicists and purists if yeah. she speaks openly about what her opinions might be. But, you know, when they write a decision, they're openly speaking about their opinions yeah. and their legal positions and their own view of things. So I don't know how much of a difference it makes.
That is really interesting. William Douglas, the great liberal on the court in my lifetime, his views were certainly very well known, but he did express them in opinions. Not
he used his opinions to
no.
Right.
Well,
Alan
also,
would like me to call on him.
He also oh. talked. Douglas also talked to everybody who wanted to talk to him. I brought my classes to Washington year after year, and he always saw them.
That's
and he always,
awesome.
And he always talked to them.
Wow.
Now, Roselle brought her high school class to Washington. I think it was high school. It may have been by the time she was at Mass College, and he saw them. And I said, why do you do this? He says, it's the right thing to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
Sandra Day O'Connor met our high school class
yeah.
in 1980
wow.
whatever.
Yeah. Sandra really cool. Day O'Connor has also gotten into trouble, did in the day get into trouble for speaking out about
but kids, it's so stupid because we know what Clarence Thomas is going to say in every single decision that he makes. So the fact that he
or Sam Alito, the same thing.
Yeah.
No surprise.
So yeah. the fact that they talked to somebody and said something, you know, not on the bench is hardly the point. The point is we know who they are. And they're not fooling anybody.
Yeah, perhaps it's just a ruse that we have this premise that judges are completely objective
oh, please.
And that they don't bring any political bias.
Yeah, I hear this all the time.
Into the decision making.
Just like journalists.
Right. Yeah, we could go on for an hour on that, Alan, right?
Well, we could.
But we shall not.
Be moved.
Let's go to a couple letters, and then we'll take a break, and we'll move on to other topics.
Okay. Would anyone have asked about new drapes at 10 Downing if the new PM were a man? Mary, I'd like to speak to that, if I may, because the fact of the matter is we always say it's become a political staple. You say he shouldn't be measuring the drapes in the Oval Office yet. So yeah. you can look for trouble, but that's not it. I don't think anybody else on that.
It's a metaphor, yeah.
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 I'm pretty thin-skinned on that, and I didn't take offense at you, Mike.
Yeah.
So.
You've been absolved.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, not by me. So, Barbara.
I thought you were absolving.
No, I'm not. I don't have the power to absolve.
You're not going against Mike? You're not freeing Mike of the burden?
Only the, you know.
The who?
God.
Okay.
Can do that. Okay. Barbara says, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Donald Trump's popularity is based on the fact that he tells it like it is, but Judge Ginsburg is criticized for it? And let's see.
Ruth has her supporters, too. There are
banners
to her.
Club.
She is a huge fan
she's
club.
A cult
she, yeah,
among
yeah. She's awesome.
People.
Here's trouble for you, Rosemary. Clarification, please. Yesterday in a courtroom in Michigan, a prisoner grabbed a gun and killed two bailiffs, Joseph Zangaro and Ron Kinsley. A deputy and a woman were also shot. The prisoner was taking hostages, which could lead to more murders. Two other bailiffs entered the at risk their own lives and killed the prisoner. Based on the way Rosemary sounded yesterday, the bailiff should not have shot the prisoner, who had just killed two retired police officers and shot a lady. They should have, instead, risked their lives to capture the prisoner so that he could have his day in court. Does Rosemary still feel this way in this situation? If not, can she please clarify?
20 seconds.
The situations are not comparable. That was a clear and present danger in the courthouse, and they acted as they had to. Not so with the sniper, at least that we've been told. He was negotiating. He was not firing. Why not have extended it? Why just send in a bomb? Seems very different to me.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many other topics to discuss, and we have a lot of letters as well. So we'll get to all of that in just a moment. We'll be right back after this short news break. Closer and closer. That is what the Hillary Clinton campaign is saying about the relationship between the presumptive Democratic candidate for president and Senator Bernie Sanders. They are set to rally today in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and an endorsement is expected to come. Just to set this up, when Barack Obama sealed the nomination, it was 4 days after Hillary Clinton then endorsed him. It has now been, I believe, 36 days. And the question I asked the group is, does this matter?
Well, there's new reports that young people, Bernie's constituency is turning towards Hillary, so I guess there's some to it. I think it's also the process that everybody kept reminding me when I badmouthed Bernie. That was so important, actually has happened. The two campaigns have talked. There is a merging of some of their ideas. I don't know how effective Hillary will be in making them come to pass if she does get in. For example, how is she going to pay for free college tuition? And what happens to private colleges if you have free tuition at the public schools? These issues are, you don't have to solve them right now. She's just saying, sure, Bernie, whatever you want.
Well, it's not exactly what he said. He said free tuition for everybody. She says income qualified.
Yeah, you know. $100,000.
Okay. I mean, same point. What happens to private colleges?
Well,
what
I don't
happens
know, but
to federal aid and
it can be done.
Student loans
and it's also,
Pell Grants?
Well, it's good that we're talking about.
And it's also mostly on community colleges, the focus, as to broaden what President Obama had put forward, correct?
Yeah, but it can be done. I mean, you know, Hunter, when I went there, I talked about it ad nauseum, was free. Somehow the City University was a free place. And all kinds of people went to the City University who never, ever, if you had charged $500, they couldn't have gone.
Yeah. Daniel Patrick Moynihan went to the City College.
Alan Chartok went there.
Okay, we're talking about the olden days. Like, what's the benefit now? And I don't know. I'm not opposed to it. Please, I teach. This is more work for me. But
Well, I should say that proportionately, you know, when I was going to college, which was about 45 years ago, it was the amount of aid you had from the state, and if you went to an in-state college, paid half your tuition and room and board. Now it pays books for a semester. It's almost the same amount of money, while the cost of the college is going up.
Not only that, but it's $65,000 for some of these places and more now to go to college, which is a sort of an economic segregation. Let's face it. Who's got that kind of money? Oh, say the presidents of those colleges. We give out a lot of scholarship money.
Well, some of them do, but some of them don't have it to give out. They don't have these huge
To go back to Bernie and Hillary, however, I think what's happening is they're negotiating. They're not deciding the issue. They're not thinking it through and figuring out how we really make it happen. They're just saying, I'll give you this. I'm not going to give you that. It's horse trading that's going on. And I'm not sure if that's a great process,
about the timing?
But you all seem to like
it. Going back to Joe's question, what about the timing? I mean, is it it took 45 days. It only took Hillary 4 days to endorse Obama in 2008. Is it because it's trying to help Hillary after the FBI thing and maybe just get the conversation going? Is it time to maybe interfere with Trump's announcement this week of who he's going to have as his running mate? And the Republican convention begins on Sunday. I mean, is that the timing thing? Who knows? It does seem calculated to maybe both of those
things. Because originally he said it would go till the convention.
Right.
There's no question he's been under a lot of pressure from Democrats to unify the party and get it together. But Bernie's been plainly his own man all along. And
well, he might have looked at the polls.
Plain what? I'm sorry. Yeah. Plain what?
He's plainly been his own man all along and has, I think he has just decided, okay, I can live with it now. I think he's playing to his own timetable.
Well, look, he knows. I know Bernie pretty well. He knows that if he doesn't do this, he is going to go down as a Benedict Arnold in, in American history in a way, because he could cost her the election, and he doesn't want that on his mm-hmm. thing. But however, I'm still getting letters from people who are angry at Elizabeth Warren because she's been supporting Hillary. This is incredible to me. So that the question is not will all the Bernieites come over. But will there be enough, just a few enough, in crucial swing states
to make a difference? I know. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, let's look. She did not start her support, very vocal and effective support of Hillary, until after Hillary, by every measure possible, popular vote, delegates, superdelegates, won the nomination. Right. She did not hurt Bernie.
Let's make
that clear.
No, I don't think she did. On the contrary, yeah. I think what these people are yelling at is, as long as you make a decision that isn't my decision, you come over, then you're bad.
Yeah, that's
ridiculous.
That is.
There are choices to be made in this election. Do you want 4 Supreme Court judges who are going to be conservative judges? We already know who they are because Trump has already announced his list of probable people. So that could change American history right there.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg got into trouble for saying that.
Yes.
Well, I'm not her.
How much do you think it is going to, and I guess we ask this question every 4 years, don't we, or 8 years, or whenever it's relevant. How important is this pick going to be, especially for Trump?
The vice presidency.
Yes.
Yeah. If it's the... I think it's going to be important. I think people are going to see legitimacy if he picks somebody like the general who's got the book out. I can't think of his last name. Mike
Flynn.
Yeah, Flynn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He's very articulate, and he's harping his book now. And he's been on a lot of the shows. He defends him very well. If it's somebody like Chris Christie, I think it says something else. It says, I'm going to be a bully, and the guy next to me is going to be a bully, and that may appeal to people, but it may turn
people. And if it's Newt?
Yes, and if it's Newt. I just can't imagine
zombie.
Newt Gingrich being number 2 and having to sort of be deferential to Donald.
And I can't imagine Donald wanting him to be there.
He'll get too much attention himself.
Yeah.
On the other hand, some obscure general. Or admiral, or whoever he is,
lieutenant general.
Hardly is a pick that will get you votes. Whereas some of the politicians bring with them a constituency.
Pence, Senator Pence.
Illinois.
Mike Pence. Yeah. Isn't the history of vice presidents that if you have a good and qualified and popular one, it does. Yeah, nothing happens. If you get a bad one, Sarah Palin, Tom Eagleton. to quote the two classic ones, then you get hurt. Right. So
Bush won. He still beat Dukakis. But it
how
was,
do you spell potatoes?
Yes,
but at
right.
any rate, how who could Trump pick who would hurt him?
A lot of people.
He's so bad
Sarah
himself.
Palin.
Which, by the way, is why you're getting all of this talk about vetting. Vetting becomes very important, as we have all learned. Eagleton was a good man, but Eagleton had some, mental issues.
Electroshock therapy.
Yeah.
And didn't tell anybody about it. Didn't tell.
Well, he wasn't properly vetted. They should have known.
Yeah, because it was
out. And then they should
have
been straightforward about it and decided whether they were going to support that.
Do you go with the logic of to look for a governor like Mike Pence in Indiana as opposed to a senator so as not to screw up the...
Well, you got to get along with them. I mean, I think that can't be underestimated.
Yeah, but to screw up the balance of the House or Senate.
If it creates an opportunity for a Democrat to get into the Senate. Yeah.
Have you seen any indication at all that Trump makes those kind of political, thoughtful decisions, that he's looking at, he's from this state, not this state, and I need to... Have you ever seen him do this once?
Oh, he's a great deal maker. I mean, he can make good deals.
So he tells me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it seems like what we have seen is that
We're all doing the Trump hand gestures here.
We're signaling each other about how many letters there are.
What we have seen, though, is that Donald Trump is a showman, and Donald Trump puts on a show, and that by bringing many people, by bringing them out, the potential candidates, and giving them a whirl and giving them a few minutes and kind of testing them with the people is a way of doing that.
You also get credit. I mean, I once said to Cuomo, you get all this credit for all these judges you appoint. And he said, yeah, no, you get 5,000 people who hate your guts because you didn't appoint them, and you get one who's an ingrate.
Well, he made some great judicial appointments, Mario Cuomo did.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's part of his legacy that is undeniable.
Peter says, VP, the issue of mental health is tricky. We eliminate anyone who's been treated for it, but elect those who plainly need the treatment.
I don't want to bring up the McGovern-Eagleton thing at this point again. I think that's history.
Okay.
We've come a long way since then. Sean says,
Clinton, Sanders, Rosemary. Rosemary, you started the discussion lightly voicing support for the idea of shortening U.S. presidential campaigns like the British have just done with Ms. May's selection.
No, I didn't support it. Yeah. I just said they are a lot shorter.
Yeah, that's true.
I like ours. They're much more interesting.
And you're still harboring a grudge that Sanders shows his support only 4 months before the general election? And Ted says,
did I do that? I'm sorry. I think you just know that I like Hillary, and so you're reading into my behavior. Not true.
That happens a lot around here, by the way. Ted says, Alan, Bernie Sanders supporters being angry at Elizabeth Warren speaks loudly about their progressive positions. Has it really been about the revolution or about the person they support? Said Ted. And Rick says, Trump VP picks. I have been disappointed since Trump announced his candidacy, knowing that Joan Rivers' death prevented her nomination to VP. Yet Howard Stern for Secretary of State, Dr. Phil for Health and Human Services, Sylvester Stallone for head of the VA is still possible. And Bill says Hillary Clinton endorsed Barack Obama in 4 days because she was negotiating for herself. She was named Secretary of State. Bernie Sanders is negotiating for what the majority of the American people want. And Kenny says, why can't you all accept that Bernie cares more about these issues, relieving the burdens on the poor and the middle class and getting the rich to pay their fair share that he does about getting himself elected?
I think we accept that. I mean, I think he's sincere, and I think that's behind his whole movement. I think the real question is, how effective can he be, and what's the best way to bring the most of his supporters behind Hillary and get them out to vote on Election Day? And that's about the timing. I'll be very interested to see what he has to say today and how strongly he endorses her or what he says. And I think a lot of people are anxious to hear that, too. A lot of people are waiting to be inspired by him and somehow see if that can rub off on Hillary.
You know, it's interesting, Joe. Maybe you could talk about our programming for this afternoon. And if this Bernie thing comes in, I don't know how we're going to do everything, but go ahead.
Well, the Interfaith Service for the officers in Dallas and a service for unity with President Obama, former President George W. Bush, and the Vice President will be taking place in Dallas, and we'll be covering that live beginning, we believe, around 1:30. So we'll fine-tune that as more details become available, and be running that throughout the afternoon. From my understanding, the announcement for, the press availability for New Hampshire for Sanders and Clinton is at 11, but I could be wrong on that. I know that was the time that everybody, the event time, but I don't know that's when they're actually supposed to speak. So, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will get more and talk a little bit about the aftermath of the shootings in Dallas and as well as Baton Rouge and Minneapolis. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok is here. We also welcome Rosemary Armeo and Mike Spain. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. We do want to talk about In the aftermath of the Dallas shootings, there has been a lot said about David Brown, the comm at the center of the crisis. All eyes will be on that city today. As I mentioned before the break, the president, vice president, and former president George W. Bush will travel to Dallas to mourn the deaths of five white police officers gunned down by a black Army veteran. His latest effort by President Obama to bridge one of the starkest divides in American society. There's an article in the New York Times of him huddling with speechwriters and hoping to find the words, but not only to console those, the families of those of the officers who were killed, but also to reassure the nation at large that the racial divides in this country are worsening, and it is something that needs to be addressed.
He's right, Joe. And I looked at the polling that has come out this morning that shows that, white people, including women, Rosemary, mm-hmm. are on one side of this, and that black people and others are and younger people are on the other side of this. And that just shows the truth of what Joe just said, the racial divide, which is so pervasive in this country. Let's just assume for a second that one demented idiot had not shot the cops. The discussion was showing that black lives do matter, mm-hmm. And it was important. And this guy with one gun takes the whole thing. And now we're playing that funeral this afternoon, as well as the healing service. But as far as I'm concerned, we also ought to be doing the funerals of some of the unjust people who have been shot by cops who shoot at black people. We have statistics and the rest faster than they shoot at white people.
Well, let me ask you this. Black Lives Matter make it impossible to also respect Blue Lives Matter? I mean, can the two exist mutually?
Of course they can, but they can. But this is what you're getting now. You're saying there's this a very important movement, which is we have a spate of killings of black men, and in at least a few cases, there's no argument about why it should have been done. It shouldn't have been done. And that's a different story. And so every time we say black lives, those black lives and those statistics matter, somebody says, well, don't blue lives matter? Well, they do.
Of course they do. I mean, there's a woman interviewed I was driving in today on NPR, the wife of a patrolman in Dallas who was in one of these groups showing support for the police there, saying, I don't feel like President Obama has our back. If you criticize police behavior, you don't have their back. And that's the problem.
Yep.
You have to be able to criticize police when they misbehave, when they make mistakes.
Oh, my God, that sounds so right and reasonable when you say it.
Right.
And I have always believed in it.
What he said.
Yes.
But you go try
criticizing any action on the part of your local hometown police department.
Well, that's the problem. District attorneys won't do that. And it's interesting in Louisiana, they have turned over the investigation to the federal government, which I think was a smart thing to do. We talked before about the appearance of conflict and what it meant for a judge to express a political view. But in local cases, a district attorney should just let somebody else, an outside independent investigator, come in. And in New York, by executive order, Governor Cuomo issued last year, that's what happens if there's questions.
And
the Attorney General comes in and takes over.
And, Mike, these DAs know full well that they are off the hook.
Yes,
if they go to the feds.
They complain about it publicly, but it lets them off the hook.
Sure, and the same thing in New York.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Yeah. I have nothing to add to that. I think that was pretty cogent.
Okay, so when
thank you, Rosemary.
You're welcome. Very good. I rate you highly on that discourse.
So, what do you think should come out of? I mean, when you look at the importance of a speech and of trying to negotiate that relationship between the police and the community, and build a trust that may or may not be there, in depending on what community you're talking about. And also honoring the lives of the police officers who were killed, and honoring, as Alan mentioned, honoring the lives of those who lost their life as the result of a traffic of botched traffic stops last week. How do you do that?
Well, you do your best, and I think that's why Rosemary and Mike said they were huddling. The president was huddling with his speechwriters, trying to find Joe. You said it. Trying to find the right words, because I don't know that there are. Let's face it. Police departments, and believe me, I've been there needing the services of police departments, do protect law-abiding citizens when they're doing their jobs. They do that. But on the other hand, you could also say that they're there for the establishment to keep order. They are. We all know that. When I come in the morning on Central Avenue in Albany, New York, and a guy comes up to me and starts to hassle me, I know that I want a cop. I mean, it's that simple. Or as the old things used to say at the back of the car, if you're in trouble, call a hippie. You got that right. You've heard that. And so it's a tough one.
Well, you know, it's so true that every single day that a police officer comes to work, their life may be in danger at just any moment, and that's a risk they all face, and we have to be enormously dedicated to protecting them and standing behind them. And I think any good police officer will say that they don't want us to support dishonest police officers, bad police officers, and yet they're the ones that are getting all the attention. And there's so many good police officers, so overwhelmingly more good police officers, that when we focus on the actions of a few, which are egregious, these actions, you know, it makes it sound like it's either or. Isn't either or.
On social media, it is just filled now with stories about, like, cops who get puppies out of tight spaces right. And cats out of trees and little boys who are lost. And, but that doesn't wipe away that they blew away a man who just
but
had
they
a
didn't
tail
do
light.
It. A police officer in Louisiana
exactly.
did it, or a police officer who made a mistake in Minneapolis.
15%.
Did it.
That's what the estimate is of bad cops.
But if you heard Trump,
the law and order candidate.
That's
yes,
right.
That's
I am the law and order candidate, and I will always and forever stand with our people who protect us and the police. He knows exactly whose votes he's trying to get.
And it's wrong. It's exactly the...
Well, he's always pandering. That's his approach.
It's just that reflex reaction that Mike was talking about. We have to be supportive.
He's successfully pandering. That's the horrible thing about this.
Nate Silver has his chance to win at 22% at this particular time. I hold.
Yeah, I think Nate Silver also predicted he wouldn't get the nomination.
Yeah, he did. He did.
He's improved his work since then. He wants to be.
He has corrected his
methods. He has a high motivation
to be right
now.
But the polls remain. Yeah. The latest poll that was released today, 3%.
Within the 5% margin of error. Yeah.
And that's the popular vote. The electoral vote's different.
But we do not know. We do not know who's going to turn out. That's the important thing here.
We are out of time. I want to thank everybody who wrote in. And what?
That
we surprised you? That,
I know.
Yes.
I didn't realize it was 9:58.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being a part. And we'll be back, obviously, with another panel tomorrow. Plus, we will continue with the roundtable after this short break.